already you've gone from what used to be a manual process of saving an attachment to a folder to potentially then saving some metadata to then potentially entering it into a third-party system, all as an automation piece, and you've got all that extra time to go and do something that's a bit more valuable, spend some time with customers or colleagues.
Hello and welcome to Tech for Finance, where we help finance pros stay ahead of the game, develop their skills, and free up time for the things that matter most using technology. Please like and subscribe.
Hey everyone, today I'm excited to welcome Damien Bird, or DamoBird365 as you can find him on YouTube. He's a Microsoft Cloud Architect, Power Automate guru, and he's just passed 10,000 followers on YouTube. So there's some excellent work there, Damien. Very impressive stuff. It's great to have you on. Really appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. Thanks so much for having me. It has been a bit of a whirlwind the last 3 years getting into YouTube. Just starting it as a bit of a distraction, really. But yeah, it's been great to see it grow, and I've really enjoyed the interaction online.
Yeah, it's I guess it's consistency, isn't it? You know, keep on posting, you know, and then people follow, especially if the content's great. And I know your content's great, so yeah, it's one of those.
Well, I agree about consistency. It is trying to get a video out every weekend, or at least every other weekend. There have been periods when I've dropped content for a bit, just with things going on at home and etc. But it's amazing to look back at the earlier videos that I've done. You know, one of the things that I heard at the beginning was, I was watching a guy called Kevin Stratfert, who's very big now on YouTube. And one of his feedbacks was that, you know, you will get better. And it's all about keeping going. And you do just see little improvements week by week, month by month. So looking back at some of the videos, they're not brilliant, but I still got a lot of views on them. So, you know, they weren't maybe the best camera or the best microphone, but folks still enjoy them.
If the content's good, then sometimes the quality of the production can slip a little bit. You know, they often say, you know, what is it, 80% is good enough, you know, done is better than none and all of that sort of stuff. So, no, it is great. So, but no, as I say, appreciate you coming on, and so it'd be great for my audience to, I guess, build up a better understanding of Power Platform, and then specifically Power Automate, because I think actually it's underutilized, unless you've got a Microsoft evangelist in your business that's telling you to use Power Automate for everything, right? It's difficult sometimes to get to grasp with the art of the possible in the tool. But, and I don't know whether I mentioned this to you previously, Damien, but in a previous life, I worked for a Microsoft partner. And we always struggled because every time we spoke to a customer, we had to first explain what all of the different Microsoft words meant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like it was Dynamics at the time. So you could have, you know, Dynamics Business Central. You could have Dynamics Finance and Supply Chain. We could have Dynamics for Sales and all that sort of stuff. So I generally felt like half of the conversation every time we spoke to somebody new was just demystifying that sort of stuff.
Yeah, sure.
And then as soon as you've got a new term, then it's rebranded to something else, like so data universe, fabric, all of that sort of stuff. So I guess, can you start us off by just quickly whizzing us through some of the terminology in the Power Platform, maybe the most important stuff, and then maybe the stuff that isn't as relevant or terminology that people can forget because it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, sure. So Power Platform is the low code, no code. That's the stuff that I work on, and they're predominantly five products. And you mentioned rebranding as well. So they used to all be Power, but there's a change with Power Virtual Agents. It's become, any guesses what that is recently? Nope. So Power Virtual Agents is your chatbot. It's now called Copilot Studio. So the most recent change that we've had. So if you're ever thinking about building a chatbot, then it was Power Virtual Agents. It's now Copilot Studio. And that's all got the generative AI stuff in it, which is really cool. Some of it is still in preview. But then as we work our way through the other products, we've got Power Pages, which is a public-facing website. And so I don't touch that much at work myself. But if you think about you wanting customers to go and log in and interact with the data that you hold on the Power Platform, then that is the secure way of doing it. That's the product off the shelf. So that's number two. Number three, we've got Power BI. So that's your business intelligence, if you ever wonder what BI stood for. And that's for doing your reports and dashboards, crunching all that data. Again, it's not a product that I touch much. It's, I think, the oldest product, actually, of the Power Platform. And then we've got Power Apps. And the most familiar of the Power Apps is maybe Canvas Apps for most low-code, no-coders. So Canvas Apps within the Power App stack is build what you see is what you get, the drag and drop, add your buttons in, your different controls, and again, the low code, it's PowerFX that you use, which is the same language as you have in Excel. And then finally, of course, the big Power Automate, that's the product that I love, the automation tool. And again, that comes in two flavors. You've got cloud flows, and you've also got desktop flows. And so some time ago, maybe about 3 years ago, is a rebranding from Power, well, from Flows, or Microsoft Flow, to Power Automate, and that was with the RPA, with desktop flows coming into play. So I do a lot of stuff on cloud flows. That's what my videos are predominantly about. But desktop flows are there as well. And desktop is RPA, robotic process automation, and that's when you're looking to integrate with legacy systems where you haven't got an API. A cloud flow could quite easily connect to an API, but a desktop flow gives you that fallback if you're using old systems and want to do some automation. So that's the Power Platform. Underlying on that, you might hear Dataverse. That is Power Platform's, enterprise-ready database system, for want of a better description. And so you don't need Dataverse to build apps. You can use SharePoint lists. And this is where you start talking about licensing and scalability and costs. But Dataverse is very much your enterprise-grade storage solution for building your apps and flows, etc.
And then how does Fabric play into all of this? Is because, I mean, I feel like an idiot sometimes just because I can't keep up, but I thought Fabric was a data layer.
So talking about another sort of rebranding as such, and it's bringing together a lot of the Power BI functionality. It's not an area that I specialize in, if I'm totally honest. But Fabric, like you mentioned, there's data lakes, etc. And that's bringing together all the data stuff under a new umbrella known as Fabric. Yep.
Well, there we go. Yeah, I remember attending a conference a few months ago where they kept talking about Fabric, and there were some very puzzled looks in the audience. So conversation for another day, eh?
But, yeah. Things are changing all the time. Even like Active Directory has recently rebranded as Entra ID. So if you've heard that at all. Yeah, it's a constant change, definitely.
So I can't not ask the question, because everybody knows me by now, and that they know that I'm a nerd when it comes to, you know, AI and automation and that sort of stuff. I don't have anywhere near the level of expertise you do on the automation front, but I've done a lot of work with AI, not just generative AI, but traditional AI in terms of machine learning and, you know, predictive analytics and that sort of stuff. And I got really excited when I heard about Copilot Studio. Yeah, I'd not used Power Virtual Agents before, but of course, you know, one of the advantages of all of the press around generative AI and OpenAI releasing the GPTs within ChatGPT was our ability to create bots, you know. And of course, there's other platforms, you know, Poe, and there's now a load of off-the-shelf tools that you can create bots like really easily. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, right, well, Microsoft have kind of created their own ChatGPT by using Copilot. It's not the Copilot that sits within Microsoft Office. That's just the equivalent chatbot you can use going to, I think it's copilot.microsoft.com. And I'm thinking, right, well, they've all but mimicked ChatGPT for free. And I remember a lot of people saying, oh, you don't need to use ChatGPT anymore, just use Copilot, right? But it doesn't have the data analysis and some of the other stuff that you can do. And I was thinking, I wonder when they're going to release their equivalent of GPTs. And then I saw some more information around Copilot Studio. So I had a bit of a look. And I think the walkthrough that you do when you try and go into Copilot Studio is they try and make it easy. Obviously, you know, walk you through it step by step. So even a novice can do this. And I think maybe I was trying to adopt it too early, because it wanted to sync to my website.
Mm-hmm.
So it could very quickly create a bot that would be an assistant for the website using the data from the website.
Yeah, yeah.
I went through all of the steps. And then I put the chat message saying, you know, tell me something about, and I can't remember what the query was that I used. And it just replied with, thank you. And I was like, okay, maybe I need to shelve this for another day, right? But I think for the audience, the most relevant thing about Copilot Studio, and again, I'm not entirely sure how accessible it is just yet for, say, smaller businesses and non-technical people, and maybe you can speak a little bit about that, is it is one of those that is potentially a more secure way of building bots because it resides within that Microsoft infrastructure. Right. So if you are using Microsoft 365 and all of the associated stuff, there's an argument to say that sharing your data with a Microsoft Copilot using Copilot Studio is a safer option than building like a GPT and ChatGPT. I don't know whether you'd agree with that or not.
Yeah, so I think it's useful to understand what Copilot Studio is and what I suppose ChatGPT is, because ChatGPT is your language model.
Mm-hmm.
And like one of the things I've done recently as well is explore other language models like Mistral, for instance.
Great.
You've seen that one. So ultimately what Copilot Studio and what Copilot is, first off, is it is a chatbot sitting on top of that language model. And so all the security governs and the control and data and stuff like that is part of the Copilot product. And then when it comes to Copilot Studio, and we think about the original Power Virtual Agent, when you build a Power Virtual Agent back in the day, you would go and set up what's called a trigger word or trigger words for topics. And then you would define the workflow within that topic. So you would trigger a topic based on, you know, where is my parcel or a customer complaint or something like that. And you're having that conversation. It will jump into that workflow. It'll work your way through it and it'll ask all the questions. And it's a very strict model that it goes from top to bottom. And then when the generative AI piece came into what's now called Copilot Studio, you could still follow that model. You can still have topics, but you can now use generative AI, and underneath all of that sits GPT. I think it's currently GPT 3.5 in Copilot Studio, and ultimately it'll become 4, and as new models come out, we'll get that as part of the product. But all of the worry about having to set temperature and all these different parameters that you have on the model and where your data resides have all been built into Copilot Studio. So if you want the model to answer questions about your website, your experience might have not been perfect at the time, but you have that really easy integration where you can just attach a public website. And there's a really good example of one of the Microsoft partners sponsoring Facial Palsy UK. Yeah. They've actually got Copilot Studio embedded on their website because they've got a whole host of information on their website, but sometimes quite difficult to find when you do a search. But when you can have that conversation with a bot and using the generative AI piece, it can go away and return to you a lovely summarized paragraph of information and all the references to where it's found it on the website. And all of a sudden you've got a lot more meaningful information. So like Copilot Studio is really about developing your own Copilot, but also having, like say, the advantage of all the Microsoft 365 technologies and being able to use Power Automate, you can integrate that as well and call upon different APIs, tell a joke. You've also got Azure as well. You can bring that in and have data stored in Azure and even use stuff that I know the acronyms like RAG for retrieving documents and stuff, but I don't necessarily fully understand the pro code side of it. But there's so many integration options with Copilot Studio.
And I think this is where, as people become more familiar with these tools, and it's what I've said with previous guests, you know, if you're willing to wait a little bit until you get the more proven iteration of whatever this tool is, you're going to get more capability without getting too caught in the weeds of like the early adopter phase.
Yeah,
that's where I find myself stuck at a little bit. But taking the example of bots, and it doesn't matter where it is, you know, so to take a scenario Let's say that I want to create a finance bot that is working on some sort of compliance data set. You know, so you might have a load of documentation, PDF or otherwise, on, you know, IFRS or whatever the latest, you know, finance and accounting standard is, to the point where you want to be able to Q&A that data without having to read through reams of PDF documentation. Other examples could be, and again, taking data security into account, you know, if you've got a shit ton of customer contracts, for example. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a file folder that's got 100 customer contracts and you want to recall what the renewal was on that contract or what the initial terms were, or whether there was any tweaks to the contract that affect, you know, financials or billing or anything like that, having a bot that spans all of that documentation and all of that knowledge base can be seen as a real advantage for information recall. But I'm still finding some real limitations with that. And I think it will get better as the models get better, but let's say you upload 3 documents to a GPT or something like that, and it probably relates to the way that the RAG works or, you know, whatever the technical gubbins is in the background.
Yeah.
But it is still so hit and miss with its ability to recall information accurately. I've seen heaps and strides in terms of being able to recall information from a single document, mm-hmm. very accurately. But I think when you expand that knowledge set, you've got a combination of documentation that maybe has different formats, that's where it really falls down. So, you know, if we can get to that next iteration using something like, you know, Copilot Studio, where it is generally better at working with data or databases, as you said, if it's connected to Azure, I think that could be an answer.
Yeah, and I think, like you say, when as the models improve, I saw a post the other day, and it's something I want to go and have a look at, the latest GPT 4.0. I don't know if it's 4.5 turbo or something like that. It's now got the ability to have 128,000 tokens, which is a lot of words. And also its underlying data is updated to December 23, you know, so it has almost current knowledge. So if that then gets inserted into your Copilot Studio, the power behind that is going to grow massively over the GPT 3.5 that's currently sitting there, and therefore it will be able to answer questions about larger documents. But I guess we'll be burning through a lot more computing power and a lot more money, because that's ultimately what it relates to. It's all these expensive GPUs that are running.
Yeah, there's definitely hardware limitations, that's for sure. And just to demystify a couple of the concepts for the audience, because we mentioned a couple of AI-specific terms there. And in reality, they sound more complicated than they actually are. So I'm not going to explain RAG because we don't have time and I don't know. So we're not going to go into that territory. But temperature that Damien mentioned earlier relates to how creative you want the response to be. Yeah. So if you set the temperature at 0, it's going to follow your instructions to the book. So a good example of that is if we're talking about documents, for example, and we want the chatbot to only recall information from that document, we don't want it to invent anything or be creative, set the temperature to 0 with the instruction only produce information from this document and nothing else. Yeah, so it's very rigid, very structured. For more creative tasks, where you're happy to let it loose a little bit more, you can set the temperature higher and say, well, maybe this is a creative task. You know, so it's as much as, you know, it's as much up to you, large language model, to be creative as it is for me to give you creative input. So you set a higher temperature, you know, but that's more relevant to people that use APIs, you know, and as you've said in Copilot Studio, you know, that's kind of all preset, so you don't have to worry about it. The second piece where Damien was talking about the, was it 128,000 token window? Yeah. That relates to how much information the AI can process in one go or throughout the course of a conversation. So in short, the bigger the number, the more information that it can digest. And this is where Google are really chomping at the bit to try and surpass some of the OpenAI models, because the Gemini releases, so previously Bard, which I hated, and I'm warming up to more of the Google models now, just because Bard was rubbish, like in comparison to OpenAI at the time, it's a lot better than it was now. You know, they started saying, you know, in the Gemini Ultra, you're going to have a million token window. And some of the early adopters or people that have early access to the program are able to upload videos, for example, you know, and you know, this is gigabytes of data, and have the AI accurately recall the information from a moment in a video.
Mm.
So tell me what you see 23 seconds in, and it'd be able to pull that information through accurately. So that's where it gets interesting. You know, when do we get to the point where data and processing information isn't an issue? But as you've said as well, Damien, if you do want to use some of these models and you are setting up bots, then there is a cost.
Yeah.
Because I experimented with this. So Claude, I love Claude. It's the Anthropic model. I think it's for me at the moment, it's the right blend of focus and creativity. So I find sometimes ChatGPT can be a little bit cold, especially for creative tasks. It seems to be a little bit too robotic. And again, it just comes down to the training at the end of the day, right? Claude, a little bit more real, if that's even a way of describing it. But what Anthropic have done recently is they said, right, well, we're going to have three tiers of model. You know, so with ChatGPT, obviously the free version still uses 3.5, which has been around for a while now. The paid for version uses GPT-4, and now via the API, as Damien said, you can have these iterations of GPT-4 that have larger context windows. With Claude, you've got Sonnet, which is the free version you can use when you just log into the chat. So if you go to just Google Claude, even though I think that's a contradiction in terms now, isn't it?
Copilot for Claude, actually.
yeah, Copilot for Claude. And then they've got their advanced GPT-4 beta now, which is Opus, which is mega. Like I literally got it to rewrite one of my posts on a different topic in my tone of voice, and it did it perfectly, which is where it gets scary, because it's acting as me, but it's not me. And I'm fundamentally against that, by the way. I don't get AI to write my posts, not all of it anyway. But then they've also got their ChatGPT contender, ChatGPT 3.5 contender, which they call Haiku. That's only available via API at the moment, unless you go to Po and use some of the official apps on Po. Have you used Po yet, Damien?
No,
I'll send you a link.
I'm learning. It was good.
poe.com. Yeah, go there. So users can create bots, so just be careful. Pay attention to the shield at the top of each bot, because it will tell you how secure it is. But they are affiliated with the official developers. Yeah, so they've got an official OpenAI set of models. So you can use 3.5, you can use GPT-4 with the big context window, and you can chat to them without having to use the API. Mm-hmm. So if you want to use Claude HiQ, for example, which is extremely fast and deals with really, really big token windows, I think it's something like 200,000 in HiQ, wow, you can do it through Po and experiment there. We've also got access to Mistral, some of the Llama models, even though they're a bit rubbish now. I actually replaced ChatGPT Pro with Po Pro for a period.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually the interface that I struggled with a little bit. And there were a couple of things that I still wanted to do with ChatGPT. Yeah. So I made the move back. But I'm forever in this sort of like situation where I'm thinking, well, more models is better. So surely if I'm paying the same price for that, I should just use that. But of course, you don't get like the advanced data analysis and all of that sort of stuff in the background with those. So yeah, definitely check it out. Where was I going with that? Yeah, we were just demystifying. So going back to the Google piece, which you can also access through Po, it's like an AI war at the end of the day, right? Who's got the biggest token window? Who's got the best training data and all of that sort of stuff? So I don't know when it's going to end. It'll probably end when we get to AGI and all of these things become self-aware, and they're not going to care how big their token windows are because they're massive. But then the next problem is compute power. You know, so I think Elon Musk announced today that he reckons we're going to have AGI next year, which is bonkers.
Well, if only we'd invested in Nvidia. That's all I can say. They've gone from a gaming company to heavily invested in AI because of all the hardware technology. It's amazing, really, the demand on because my son recently upgraded his PC. He's obsessed with, well, we bought a PC about 3 years ago. In fact, that's one of my videos on YouTube. I built a PC with both my son and then with my daughter, and my daughter wanted to appear on YouTube, so we built a PC together. But he's finally upgraded it, and he spent a ridiculous amount of money on a new graphics card, and it makes this game so much better. I'm not convinced, but he's happy. So
yeah, absolutely. And we've got, you know, we've got the emergence of AI devices now. So, you know, new generation of iPhones that are AI enabled that have all of these really good GPUs on them. It'd be the same desktop PCs and laptops, I'm sure. But yeah, it's just as much a hardware race as it is a model race, should we say, because you know, you always need hardware to run on. But anyway, I've spoken too much because you got me started. so let's go back to what we really wanted to talk about in this conversation, which is Power Automate.
Yeah.
So of course, 10,000 followers on YouTube, a ton of content. So definitely check out Damien on there. But for people that maybe are a little bit, I won't say reluctant, but just don't know where to start. You know, what are your suggestions in terms of, you know, low-hanging fruit, quick wins that you can do on Power Automate that people wouldn't necessarily think you'd be able to do that sort of stuff? And just walk us through a couple of examples would be great.
All right. So, I mean, as an end user, as someone who's new to Power Automate, you're probably wanting to pick up some personal productivity type automations. So Power Automate is all driven on triggers, so why that automation should start. And you've got triggers that are based on a button push. And if you want to have a button push, then you would potentially build a power app. But if you don't want to build a power app, you could push a button from Flow itself, from Power Automate itself, or from something like SharePoint. So if you've got files that are being stored in a document library, you could have a button that's on the column of your document library, and you could run a flow directly on a file based on pushing a button. But other automations, or other triggers, sorry, are either based on a schedule or occurrence. So back in the day when I used to own a small IT infrastructure, and I had servers that I needed to restart every weekend, that would be the equivalent of a scheduled task and a batch script. So you've got that equivalent in Power Automate. You can have a task that runs at 9 p.m. on a Sunday night, or every day, for instance. But if you want a report generated first thing in the morning, or an email going out as a reminder on a Monday morning to say these are your tasks, then you could use a recurrence trigger. And then you've got automated, so based on something happening, like when an email comes in, when a new file is created, when a new item is created in a list, or a new record is creating Dataverse, that will trigger your flow, and then you need to build out your workflow. So what you want to do. So say you get you have a centralized mailbox with invoices that come in. And so you could have, when an email arrives, there's your trigger, and then your Power Automate flow could extract that attachment and simply save it to a SharePoint document library. That could be the extent of your automation. But if you think about the amount of time that takes you throughout the week, you're constantly getting, or constantly going into this shared mailbox, saving this file into SharePoint. What a delight it would be to save that time. But then you could take it a lot further and start using some of the AI tools and OCR extraction and extracting some of the data from that file, and potentially even tag those files. If it's coming from set organizations, you could tag the organization name as part of the column metadata. And if you wanted to take that even further, you could start actually submitting some of that data to your third-party systems, your ERPs, etc. Already, you've gone from what used to be a manual process of saving an attachment to a folder to potentially then saving some metadata to then potentially entering it into a third-party system, all as a automation piece. And you've got all that extra time to go and do something that's a bit more valuable, spend some time with customers or colleagues. So there's the growing extremes of an automation with Power Automate. Potentially a personal automation, but growing into what could be quite a useful enterprise automation and dealing with invoices using AI and OCR.
And it's interesting because, yeah, there are so many companies now that offer AP automation and OCR, you know, and that sort of stuff. And if there's a quick way of doing it, if it's a non-complex process and you've already got the tools in place, then it makes sense to look at the tools you've got in place to begin with, right? But I have to admit that OCR and the character recognition was something that was new to me, you know, and I didn't realize it existed until recently. So is that, I think it's built into Azure, isn't it, that capability?
So there are two sort of methods of doing this. So you've got your low code and you've got your pro code. And so the models and services that are available in Azure are your pro code. And ultimately, they're going to offer you an API. And so if you're comfortable talking to APIs and sending data and a header and body to that API, then away you go. You don't necessarily need to use Power Automate. You can use any language you can think of. You're a professional developer. But the Power Platform also has what was called AI Builder, another rebrand. It's now the AI Hub. But again, you've got models in there that are low-code models, and the underlying technology is those services on Azure. So it's just the friendly version with the sort of preset parameters and drag and drop controls in order to use those powerful services. And so rather than paying, this is where the sort of the model of paying for this changes. Rather than paying based on consumption, you're paying on credits in AI Builder or AI Hub, in that you buy a chunk of credits that your whole organization uses. Whereas if you were using the services on Azure, you would pay literally what you use, you pay for as part of your annual, or not your annual, your monthly subscription. So it's what you feel comfortable with. You can quite easily fire up a service in Azure with the API and call that from Power Automate. And you know, the GPT models are an example of that, because they are hosted in Azure. You can use ChatGPT. You can also use the Mistral language model. And once you've fired up that service, then it's accessible via API, REST API. And then if you're not a pro coder, you can jump back into Power Automate. You can use an HTTP action. You can build what's called a custom connector. So the platforms are based around connectors. That's how you connect all the different APIs. You can build your own connector to that API, and then it just makes everything repeatable, Lego style. It's quite often referred to as Lego in the community, because you just plug stuff together, you know, it just fits in place. So that's the difference, really. You've got your low code options where it is already built for you, and you just go through the wizards next type thing. Or you can fire up the full-blown service. You've probably got a lot more control of what you can and can't do. And then you call the API directly on Azure.
So, I mean, I've built a fair amount of automations, not only in Power Automate. I'm a big fan of Make.
Okay.
Just because I find it quite intuitive. And it's also super easy to build in language models. Yeah, providing obviously that the connection exists. But yeah, OpenAI, Anthropic, Mistral, they all exist on there. So that's my extent, you know, triggering a workflow, then having AI do some sort of manipulation or something additive, and then spitting it out to either a spreadsheet or a Word document or whatever. But the problem I find sometimes is sometimes I feel like I'm thinking too big. And I think, oh yeah, no, I just automate everything. There's got to be a way to automate everything, because I've got all of these applications, all of them have functions and whatever, trigger points or all of this sort of stuff. So I'll just build. But then when you start building, I think it's just maybe, I don't know whether it's because I don't have a developer's mindset, or maybe just because I've not built enough. I always tend up like hitting a snag somewhere, whereby that one little snag could mean that I spend 3 hours doing something instead of 30 minutes. Do you see what I mean? So are there good ways of thinking? You know, are we saying to everybody, look, just map all of your apps, map your inputs and outputs, and, you know, do the step-by-step, and then, you know, see whether you can mirror it in Power Automate, or is there more of a, how do you think about it is the short question, I guess, without me rambling anymore.
I guess I'm biased because, you know, it's Microsoft technology that I work on. I've worked for Microsoft now for almost 2 years, but I was obsessed with Power Automate prior to that, because I did a lot of stuff on the forum. I was a super user on the forum, and I guess that's kind of where I learned to be able to visualize a lot of problems on the platform, because on the forum, the sort of quality of questions at time are quite vague. So if you imagine normally, if you've got a customer beside you, or even remotely in Teams, for instance, then you could say, can you share me your screen? And you can have a look. But on the forum, someone says, oh, I built this and it doesn't work. And you go, okay, right. You need to tell me a bit more than that, because I know you've told me you're building a flow to create some items in a SharePoint list, and it's coming up with funny icons or something like that. You begin to, I guess, learn what people are describing without them actually describing it, and you can visualize the products and the screens that people are on. And then the pace of change to some of these products, even though it's still quite fast pace, is less of a pace because you know it really well inside out, because you spent so much time troubleshooting issues for folk. So, I mean, I would never, I've been frontline support before in IT, and it's not something I want to go back to, but it's definitely a good place to learn. And being able to go onto a forum as just Joe Blogs and not, you know, there's no real commitment. If you want to go and solve the problem yourself and never publish it, that's fine. But it's a great place to learn, make your own mistakes, and solve other people's sort of problems. And I kind of sell that again and again to folk, in that a lot of the times when you're trying to think of a solution to build, part of the problem is actually trying to think of something to build. And I've seen folk building power apps recently off of the Front Mentor Challenge, I think it's called. And so they provide you with all the graphics and the icons, and it's up to you what platform you build your app on. But because it's given you all the materials, it saves part of the time of actually trying to come up with an idea. And away you go and start learning how to use the particular platform that you're interested in. If that's Power Platform and it's Canvas apps, then fantastic. So for me, the forum was a great place to get those challenges. And it still is, because I quite like going on there. And I sort of struggle to find more complex ones now, because I get bored of the same routine type questions. But if there's something complex, then it means I can go on a deep dive and start exploring. And yeah, I might still take 3 hours to try and work something out, and then go, oh, I can't believe it was that simple. You know? but it's part of the fun, I think. It's nice to be challenged. I think if it was all so easy, then it would be boring, and it would be time to try and do something different. But the fact that Power Platform is changing so regularly, and there is all this amazing AI stuff happening, there are so many different toys to play with, as best way I can describe it. And I enjoy exploring it.
Really quick, guys, as you know, I don't run ads and I no longer sell anything on here. So to help me, it'd be great if you could share with just one other person, leave a review, give a thumbs up and subscribe. It really does make a difference. Now back to the show.
I think from my perspective, when I think about these sort of premises, because I think, as you say, part of the challenge is, you know, what am I solving for? Because some people know that they've got an issue. You know, we need to be automated. Everything's so manual. But then when you try and scratch into, you know, the deeper level of, okay, well, walk us through what the manual steps are. Not everybody's documented every minute of their day.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So often the default response is like, oh, we spend too much time in spreadsheets. Okay, fine. Is it reporting? Is it data manipulation? Is it exporting and importing data? You know what? Do you see what I mean? So for me, as a, you know, I guess entrepreneur or wantrepreneur or whatever you wanted to describe me as, I tend to do stuff without thinking about what I'm doing. So when it comes to automating stuff, I've got my best guess at what I've done, but actually until I start going through the step-by-step, I struggle to piece that all together. So I guess my learning from when I've gone through this process is map your apps and try and understand first what happens when you come in and out of those apps. Yeah, so what folders am I going to, you know, what documents am I copying and pasting from one place to the other, as you mentioned earlier, with, you know, pulling an attachment out of an email and all that sort of stuff. But then how do I change that information? You know, and one of the use cases that we had with a previous guest referred to some of the Microsoft Copilot stuff You know, being able to say, create a PowerPoint presentation from this Word document, for example, which is a really good use case because the data is already there. Do you see what I mean? So that would be my recommendation. I suppose the next phase of that, and maybe we start going a little bit more into Excel, but hopefully not too deep because I'm by no means an Excel pro. But traditionally for automation, whether it's Excel or on Office or whatever, people would use VBA. You know, obviously now Office Script, if you want the cloudy version, but obviously to Excel. And then to sort the data, they might use Power Query, which of course is still a thing. It's got power in front of it, right?
Yep.
So technically part of the Power Platform, right? So I guess maybe that could be a starting point as well. You know, if you do have some VBA code, you know, or you have experimented in that sense, is that the right way to approach it? You know, is there like a migration path from VBA to Power Automate? Are they fundamentally different things? I guess it depends on the use case, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm by no means a VBA expert, but I did discover Office Script probably about 2 years ago and thought, wow, this is really cool. In fact, it might have been longer than 2 years ago because I came up with an idea of creating invoices because traditionally populating an Excel file using Power Automate is quite limited because there's only one action, which is to add a row into a table. So you must have a table in Excel and you add a row. And then you can add another row and loop, and that's it. But with Office Scripts, you can write a script in TypeScript, and then you can be very specific about where you want particular fields of data to be entered. And so I generated an invoice template in Excel and wrote an Office script to chuck like the customer name, the date, and then an array of lines of an invoice into that Excel file, and all of a sudden you've got a system to generate invoices off of whatever data source you can think of. And when combined with Power Automate, you've got that automation piece. So Office Scripts allows you to run a script, it accepts data as input, and you can actually, I've just seen in the last couple of days, you can now, if you run a script directly from Excel, there's almost like a little window that pops up and asks you for the input parameters. But if you've defined input parameters and you want to call that script from Power Automate, it now dynamically asks you for those input parameters. And so because it's dynamic, you can then pass dynamic content from somewhere else in your flow, and away you go. And I've done some demos recently using Office Scripts to populate Excel files as fast as you can imagine from massive data sets. And traditionally, users in Power Automate will have used a loop with add a row into a table. And you imagine trying to add 20,000 rows using that setup. Not only is it super inefficient, it hits limits on the platform. And you're going to start throttling, start failing. But with an Office script, you can bang 20,000 rows of data into an Excel file in about 15 seconds. And you can format it as a table using that same script, and you could sort it and you could do all sorts with it because you just write that into your script. So that's a good example of automation. But the interesting thing you mentioned there about discovering the type of automations and you know, having a document or a resource of the different types of apps and Excel files or whatever you might have, there's a cool tool in Power Platform called Process Advisor and Process Mining. Have you heard of that before?
Yes.
Yeah? Have you used it?
I've not heard of the tool. I'm familiar with the term process mining, but I've never gone through the process myself, but I might do after this.
Yeah, well, Process Advisor, it's a part of the Power Platform, and basically you identify the business process. So at a high level, what is it you want to map out? And I spoke earlier about capturing those invoices from an email. So you basically define what that process is by using a wizard, and then you use a recording tool and it just records the steps, and you assign that recording process to the folk that do that process, and they record the way they do it. And then you get a lovely heat map that shows where people go a different route and where the most popular route is and where there's potential time saving and where there's an opportunity to automate with cloud flows, with desktop flows. And all of a sudden you've got, oh, we've got some options here for automation. So it's quite a good discovery tool for that sort of scenario.
That sounds amazing. Yeah, I've I've experimented with the iteration after that. So not from a process mining perspective, but in recording myself doing something and then having the tool repeat my actions in an RPA like you mentioned earlier. But no, that's definitely a great shout, because it's almost like you could leave that running in the background, right? You know, it's not disruptive.
Yep.
So I mean, I don't know how long you can leave it running for, right? The guess is just for the duration of whatever the task is, hopefully.
Yeah, the aim is to record that task start to finish and get multiple people to do that same task. And then you might find that, why does, I don't know, I was going to say a random name, but John Smith. Why does John Smith go and load up that screen when actually they could just click on that button? And all of a sudden you see where folk are going totally different routes to do something that could even be done quicker manually, you know, let alone automatically. Mm-hmm. That's quite interesting to be able to compare how other people do the same task.
Well, and will that give a recommendation on what a Power Automate flow could look like, or is it up to you to then say this is the process? Because obviously you can use the I experimented it a little bit. There's the AI builder, isn't there, in Power Automate now? You can use free text to describe what you want to do.
Oh yeah, Describe It to Design It is available. Yeah. And so Describe It to Design It came out before Copilot sort of properly hit the platform. And we were speaking about Copilots earlier. There's sort of three pillars. There's three ways of thinking about co-pilots. You've got ones that you adopt. I quite like that. They're already in the product, so they're there. You have a chat with them. You've got ones that you extend, which are some of the ones that are in like Dynamics and stuff. So you potentially adopt them, but you can also extend them. And then you've also got ones that you can build, and that's the Copilot Studio. So it's either adopt, extend, or build. And so you're talking about one that you adopt because it's already there. It's in Power Automate. And you can have a chat with it. And at the moment, I believe you have to describe what you're looking for, and then you'll get a wireframe of a flow, but you still need to go and fill out all the parameters and create connections and stuff like that. It'll get better, I'm sure. And there's the same that's in Canvas apps as well. You can describe a basic app and it'll do a data model for you and maybe a one screen, a two screen app, something like that. Inevitably, it's there to try and get new folk involved and interested and learning how to use the product. But I'm very much a hands-on person. I'd still much rather build from scratch because then I know what it's doing. You don't learn otherwise, do you?
That's it. And my experience of that is that I thought it was great when I first saw it pop up because I was like, oh, yeah, amazing, cool. Like, I don't need to click anymore. I can just like tap. But I found that the iterations of me trying to describe it were slower than me just adding the steps myself. But of course, that's from the perspective of somebody who is familiar with automation, you know, the steps, the if this, then that type stuff. So I think from what you've said there about adoption as a first entry point, totally use it, because you'll then have, as you say, a wireframe for the different component parts.
Yep.
So as a learning exercise, I think it's excellent.
Well, one of the things, well, pretty much the only thing that I like about Copilot in Power Automate, and I don't actually use it, but I quite like asking it what a flow does. So I build a flow and then I ask it back, what have I built? And it does a reasonably good job of explaining to me what process I've created in the workflow. And so that could be incredibly useful for someone stepping into someone else's flow in 6 months' time, looking at the logic and thinking, I have no idea what this is. Let's ask Copilot. And it could then summarize it for you. And you go, oh, yeah, I see what this is all about. And then you can start making sense of it. So, you know, there are some uses. But,
So just taking a step back a little bit, because you gave an example of obviously the OCR piece of being able to, you know, get attachment, you know, and then save it somewhere and then go to the next iteration, which is extracting information and all of that sort of stuff. And then we talked a little bit about, you know, my issues with building and not knowing what to build, right? So let's imagine that we've got like a hypothetical scenario. We do actually know what we're building. So, you know, we're a step on from Adam, who's just lost, you know, the majority of the time. So we've got a scenario, and it might tie to the office scripts that you were describing earlier, where we download data from a third-party system.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a report or multiple bits. It might not even be structured data, right? It could be unstructured data. So it could be, I don't know, three spreadsheets or CSVs or whatever. So that's the input, you know, and it could be, you know, latch onto that folder, you know, whatever frequency we're likely to save those files. So it could be that they're saved once a week. So run the automation like on Friday, you know, the files are downloaded or whatever it happens to be. So you could have a recurrence, as you say, or you could just click the button to trigger it on an ad hoc basis, right?
Yeah.
What we then want to do is we might want to combine that data, which is fine. And you've iterated some ways that we could do that. So take the data from those three places, you know, and if you can't use the add row using the standard stuff, we could use an Office script for that and, you know, merge that sort of stuff together to the point where we have, you know, a consolidated output. Yeah. So that's reasonable to be able to do that sort of stuff, you know, with Power Automate, providing you've got sort of a base knowledge of how Office scripts work as well. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. How far can we then take that? So I appreciate the structural piece. Obviously, you mentioned the tables and the sorting using Office scripts for that sort of stuff. But instead of just passing data through, at what point can we change the data? And I guess this may be more of a personal question than something that's relevant for the audience. But we mentioned previously having the scenario where you could use something like a Copilot to convert text from Word document and morph it into a PowerPoint, for example. Could we take data from that spreadsheet, if it's like only three columns and lines or whatever, and say, right, well, the next step in the automation is to either convert it into this format or generate a PDF, or do you sort of see where I'm going with this? Are you limited to stuff that exists in the certain format and then passing that through, or is there a scope where you can say, right, well, we're actually going to change the nature of this data into a different document format?
So that's kind of, I think, describing what Microsoft 365 Copilot can do in theory, isn't it? Because you can reference files as part of your prompt. Yeah. And are you talking about trying to build this yourself, or what's...
So I'm thinking of a scenario whereby using the make.com example, right? So I work with Google Docs, but I may not want to send something to somebody as a Google Doc. I might want to send it to somebody as a PDF.
Oh, yeah.
So I have a step in the workflow that says, right, well, this step in the workflow exports that document as a PDF and then attaches it to an email, for example.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Again, that for me, that's a really exciting thing about Power Automate is, I mean, you have got the different licensing models. That's sometimes the sad thing, depending on what customers you're working with. But obviously in a developer environment, I've got access to all the different licenses. So creating Word documents and PDFs, etc., is all included in my dev. But if you want to populate an Excel file as an invoice template, you can then convert that into a PDF, and then you could then attach that to an email, and you can send it to a dynamic email address. And so all those things can be done as a single workflow, and you could also incorporate like an approval process into it, so that even though you've generated it as part of an editable document in Excel, you could pass that to someone to then have the final say. And then off the back of it being approved, it gets converted to PDF, and then it gets sent to whatever, you know, it gets saved, it gets emailed, it gets sent as a Teams message, it gets uploaded to an FTP. I mean, the options are endless, because once you've got the grasp of connectors and actions in Power Automate, you have the sort of pre-built ones. But if you've got an API, if you've got a third-party system with an API, then you can build a connector, and then you can use it just like a normal connector, just that you'll have to pay a premium license. Mm-hmm. If you've not got an API, you look at Power Automate Desktop, and you've got RPA. So again, you could generate an Excel file, and you could hand it off to, in fact, when I worked for an old partner, they had a document management system that was web-based that didn't have an API. And so we used RPA to upload it by literally launching the website, pressing the right buttons, hitting upload, browse, attach the document, and uploaded it. And it was all filed away on the appropriate account, you know, based on dynamic information. So It's just, for me, it's that's one of the things I really like. And that's one of the, I like the challenges. I like people saying, can you do this? And you go, oh yes. Let's start building, you know, I'm away.
Yeah, you might get some more questions from me after the session. I've not actually used Power Automate Desktop before.
Okay.
And I appreciate what you're saying is that sometimes it might be a legacy approach if the applications you're trying to automate aren't in the cloud and accessible via the cloud flow. So I get that. But as you've just said there, I also see a personal productivity side to Power Automate Desktop, even if you're not using the applications, because you do have that, right? Well, I'm going to trigger a workflow and it's going to do this repeat process whilst I go and have a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah, 100%. I think Microsoft had made, again, before I started with them, they'd made Power Automate Desktop a free product for personal use on Windows 10 and 11. Mm-hmm. And exactly for that, to try and drive some interest. And
so it's free
for personal use. Yeah So it's called an unattended gosh, I hope it's free.
Now
it was 2-3 years ago, so a lot, that's what confuses a lot of people, I find anyway, is that they find they've got a Power Automate shortcut on their PC and they go, oh, what's this Power Automate, not realizing that there's these two products. And that's, I did a video to try and dispel that myth that this is Power Automate Desktop, which is RPA, and it's not Cloud Flows, which is what you would probably use in a business first off, would be the Cloud Flows. But yeah, you should have a Power Automate Desktop icon on your personal PC. And then you can start automating. Doing some web scraping or some Excel automation.
No. I've just found it is literally on my, it is on my machine.
Is it? There you go. So that's called unattended RPA, because you can run that. Sorry, not unattended, attended. Better get that right. Attended RPA.
Oh my God, I've just lost my weekend.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that I did not know that. How did I not know that?
Well, I'm very sorry to your family. they will not be seeing you this weekend as you sit on Power Automate Desktop.
close that down. Oh, now it can. Oh, I can add it to Edge now.
Yeah, that's it. You need a little plugin so it can detect the elements on your browser. Yeah.
So all of those clicks that I'm outsourcing to my guy in Bangladesh, I mean, Power Automate can do that right
well,
now.
Well, yeah, within reason. Yeah, definitely. I find there's a huge learning curve with Power Automate Desktop or just RPA in general, because there's a lot more error handling required for robotic process automation, because you're not talking to something that's black and white. You are literally training it to find different elements on a screen and press the right one each time, and your browser restarts and all of a sudden they're changed their name slightly, or your browser tab has got a different name because it's no longer tab one, it's tab number 7 or something like that. So all this stuff underlying in RPA is quite an art of setting these things up and getting the error handling right and hoping that no one changes the underlying website or application.
Okay, fine. Okay, cool. So thank you, but yeah. Apologies, Laura, Isaac, and Roman for this weekend, because
a new toy.
I'm going to be up here. Anyway, no, cool. So, no, that's great. So, I've enjoyed going through a couple of examples there. So, how can people start with all of this? So you mentioned sometimes there is licensing. Is it fair to assume that if people have got a Microsoft 365 license that they might have an element of Power Automate already, or is it an add-on license?
So if you've got a Microsoft 365 license in an organization, then you should probably have access to Power Automate and Power Apps. And it's in what's called the default environment, and away you go. You can start building out personal automations, and you may find that a lot of the fancy stuff is all blocked, and that's where you'll hear the acronym DLP being thrown about, and basically it means your organization are trying to limit what you can do, your guardrails, so you don't accidentally go and fire out tweets about stuff that's in an Excel file or something like that by accident. So it's all there for good reason. But yeah, you should be able to go and have a play and start with something simple, like when an email arrives, save to a SharePoint list or something like that. If you've not got access to it, then there are, you can get a developer environment. Again, you can get that within your organization, but again, organizations can block it. Mm-hmm. You can also get what's called a developer tenant. So we've gone from environment level now to tenant, which is like your own organization. And I have heard that for a while they've been suspended. You might Google it, you might find a link, and then you go and fill out your details and it doesn't work. I can't guarantee what your experience will be, but that is definitely an option to explore. And that's what I've got. I've got a developer tenant, and I don't only have access to Power Platform. I've got access to Azure. I've got access to Exchange. I've got access to anything I can think of, and I can just go and play and learn. And that's what it's there for, is just to experiment and have that space to break stuff.
Yeah, that's it. And you know, I had a scenario recently of stuff that broke set up in the organization that we had to fix, unfortunately. So our flow was onboarding. Mm-hmm. So it was exactly what you're talking about with some of the stuff that we've been talking about here. So onboarding spreadsheet added to SharePoint folder. Teams notification sent to onboarding channel with link to shared Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And then people continue the conversation from there, right? So anybody that's listening, don't just think about this in terms of an automation piece, but think about it in terms of a collaboration piece, because it's important to announce and bring stuff to people's attention, which could be good, you know. So I'd always say have a provision for building notifications into a flow. Because that's super, like one of the easiest things you can do in a flow is to send a notification, right, Damien? You know, that's kind of like, you know, Power Automate 101. So yeah, like in my view, well, the majority of the automations we run end with some sort of notification, either if it's a, like a Teams message or a, like an email that goes out to a distribution list or something like that. But essentially we had somebody leave. And I don't know why it broke, actually, because the flow should have been universal. You know, it shouldn't have been triggered by an individual.
Yeah.
I think how it was set up. So the individual left, and then we had to, I'm sure you get this all the time, right?
I'm spoiling, but, yeah, because I do. It's best practices. Probably it was set up as a personal flow. Probably wasn't part of a solution, wasn't using connection references. You can see what my day job is. So that's the sort of stuff that I talk about lots, best practices, governance and stuff like that. I mean, not for me. Some people love governance, you know, love talking about all that stuff. And there are interesting times, but I do like the hands-on, definitely more hands-on person. But yeah, it sounds like that was probably set up as a personal automation. They leave, their account closes, and that's it. It stops. And then all of a sudden, you're knocking on the door of IT saying, oh, we can't get access to this flow. Does it still exist?
That's exactly what happened. So a member of the team came to me and said, Adam, you know stuff. And I was like, whoa, that's a bold statement. Like, don't hold me accountable just yet. What do I know about? Anyway, they said, yeah, so we've got this Power Automate flow. And you like your tech, so you can you have a look at it? And I don't know. I think it was, yeah, it was a previous staff member that set it up because they had knowledge and obviously they had access to the platform. And I had to go to our administrators and say, I know what the flow is called, but I can't access it because it's not been shared with me. But then, of course, that led to no end of authorization. Oh, should we give Adam access to all of this Power Automate stuff? Do we trust him? You know, all that. You know, so it's, yeah, it can be a bit of a nightmare sometimes. So, yeah, governance, hear exactly what you're saying. Got it resolved in the end. Mm-hmm. But I think we just switched it to somebody else's name. So it's just it's still happening again.
Yeah.
It's just going to happen again.
I mean, it is, depending on the size of the organization, it is a lot of hard work. I was going to say, I think the problem is, and that's where the COE was born. If you've heard the acronym COE for Center of Excellence or Power Platform, that is just a series of apps and flows to govern the Power Platform. But it's a community built solution by Microsoft internal staff. And there are now sort of native functionality being introduced into the platform to govern all this stuff and make things easier for those that have to administer it. But it has been a second thought, I think, and even for organizations, not realizing that folk can just go away and build to their heart's content. So there's been definitely sprawl and bad practices in place. But they'll catch up and folk realize. And
people need to watch all of your YouTube videos.
I'm not got enough time to cover all the things that I'd love to cover. Honestly, there's so many things. I'm sitting at work and suddenly go, oh, I could do it on this. And I never get a chance because there are just so many topics I'd love to cover.
Well, you know, that's what the channel's for, right? You keep going. Every weekend, something new.
Yeah, a new idea.
Yeah. Is there a lot of updates? Do you struggle to keep up to date? Or is it... Because I struggle. So much more coming out.
Well, there will be more updates coming. There are two waves. Second wave, or it's probably the first wave now, is it? I can't remember if it's first, second, where we are, and if it's financial year, or if it's... But there is a second wave. Every 6 months, we get a whole tranche of new updates across all the different products. And some things will just appear as well. But there is an official release planner that you can go to, and you can see what's about to be released, what has just been released, and what's in preview. And the preview stuff is stuff that might happen but might not. You get a lot of content, a lot of community content about the preview stuff. This is really exciting, but potentially you're wasting time, because until it's actually gone into what's GA, general availability, it could change, it could be restricted, it could disappear, and so that happens. So it is quite hard to keep up to speed, but you just always have like an ear to the ground, what's happening, and looking at these sites, looking at these blogs, and building up a network of people that post stuff. You just see and hear about it.
Yeah. The forums is a good shout as well. Like whenever I start experimenting with a new tool, I go to Reddit.
Yeah, I'm on there.
Yeah, which is really cool. I also find Reddit hilarious. Like there are so many people that like some of their like responses on threads, like they literally make you laugh out loud. It's like a community of people that like, I spend my life on LinkedIn, right? You know, and people generally aren't funny on LinkedIn. But on Reddit, they're funny, right? But no, they've gone public now, haven't they? I don't know how that's going to change things. They'll be governed, coming back to that conversation about governance, more heavily now. So I should imagine there might not be the same level of inappropriate shares and conversations on Reddit.
Well, I have to admit, I do generally just focus on Power Platform stuff on Reddit. There's odd sort of, there's like a Scottish banter that comes up that I sometimes look at, or fishing, or maybe people having a complaint about my Skoda Enyaq that I've got. But I do like Reddit. But I'm also, I hang about on the Microsoft forum, but also on Facebook. There's even WhatsApp groups that discuss the Power Platform as well. Just I'm anywhere and everywhere really when I'm not doing anything with the family, just seeing what's happening.
Get immersed. Well, you've got the inside track, eh? You know, find your developer communities for your inspiration. Like, you know, go hunting. You know, all good. I've kept you too long, Damien.
It's all good.
My kids are screaming in the background, as they always do. So I'm going to ask you the last question that I always ask guests, but I never tell guests that I'm going to ask.
Yep.
It's not a hard question. But the podcast is called Tech for Finance, and I come from a background. Well, I say background, but when I was younger, I went through a phase of being obsessed with like productivity apps, which is why stuff like Power Automate and AI and all that sort of stuff now, like I love it because it reminds me of when I was nerding out when I was a kid, right? So do you have like, and you can't say Power Automate because we've spoken enough about that today. You can't say ChatGPT either. But do you have like an app on your phone, a browser extension, like a gadget, like in either your personal or your professional life that you couldn't live without?
God. That's terrible, isn't it? I love my automation. Trying to think.
Don't have to give an answer. It's fine.
Yeah, I thought you were going to ask me what, something like, where did my automation journey start, or something. What my give away my age or something. But I mean, everyone can't live without their phone, I would say. But a specific app, I don't know really. At the moment, it is probably my social networks for everything that I do. Is Damo Bird is my YouTube app, my LinkedIn app. I can't say I use Twitter much these days because you don't really get much interaction on it.
Yeah, I'm struggling with Twitter at the moment, that's for sure. Do you do so? I've got the YouTube app. It always flags up a, do you want to pay for YouTube Premium, whatever. Do you see your stats on the YouTube app, or do you have to do that through desktop?
No, so there's actually a separate app. It is.
You see, you're telling me something new again now.
YouTube Studio. There we go. There's the app I can't live without. YouTube Studio. The good thing about YouTube Studio is it's like a miniature version of YouTube Studio on the browser.
Yeah,
desktop. And so I can instantly see how my views are trending, the watching hours, the subscribers for the 28 days, the income, the, you know, how my last video is doing, and also the sort of trends that last video versus like the last 10. So you get to see, you know, is it a good video or not? Have you wasted your weekend?
I don't think like that, as I say. Consistency wins.
So I'd probably say that's probably my most used app these days is the YouTube Studio, because I love getting the interaction, and it's like comments and stuff like that. So I try and respond to people. It's nice getting positive feedback on a video. I get some more complex questions these days about, I love this video, but how do I do X? And that's very difficult to support because you're not even getting a screenshot or something like that. It's not a forum. But I try and help, or I'll push people to the forum, but it's just nice getting folk interacting, knowing that I've got a new person stopping by and asking me a question about my channel. So
very good. No, I on average, I don't get more than like 20 views per video. Like, it's rubbish.
I don't want to brag or anything, but I get about 50,000 views in 28 days. So yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
Have you set up your newsletter yet?
No, I know.
We talked about it. Good job.
I know. I'm wasting my opportunity. I don't know. I've started this as something for fun. That's the crazy thing, is that I did it just as a distraction to keep me occupied, and can't believe that folk have taken to the content that I produce, and it's just become really good fun to do, really.
Oh, this shit hard, that's why. So yeah, Damo Bird 365 YouTube, go there now. I'll give you some of mine. So I mentioned Poe earlier, which you need to check out. So I've got the phone app on my phone. And it's quite cool, actually. If I go into the unofficial bots, let's have a look, explore. There is all sorts on here. There's quite a lot of image generation. So instead of like having to pay to generate images, there's a couple in there. So there's been a couple of chats that I've done to generate like cats made out of cheese and diamond encrusted dogs and that sort of stuff. Quite a lot of learning in there. So sports predictor, if you're a sports gambler, there's a bot in there. Nutritionist, travel expert, that's pretty standard, isn't it, really? This singer girl, this bot will sing anything in your mind. So yeah, I mean, you can get caught down a rabbit hole. The other one that I've got, character.ai, which is also an app. They are trending at the moment, something obscene. I don't really know why. But the bots on there are meant to be like either representations of historical figures, like philosophers, like, so there's like a Socrates bot, you know, or like anime characters, like from, you know, so you can pretend that you're talking to your favorite anime character. So that's exploded. And again, if, you know, I've got nothing better to do, then I'll just have have a giggle. But actually the Copilot, the Microsoft Copilot app is my default search now.
All right. Well, I have got Copilot on my phone, but I don't. I mean, I use it every now and again, I guess. Just trying to think if there's anything else of interest that I've got on here.
My last search on Copilot was, how often is Elon Musk right? Because you know, I mentioned previously that he said we're going to have artificial general intelligence next year.
Yeah.
Apparently, his predictions, he tends to be more right than wrong, according to Copilot. He has been correct 9 times and incorrect 3 times. For instance, he predicted that autonomous vehicles would be so safe that people could sleep in them by the end of 2019. That didn't happen. But it also references, and this might be a useful URL site for people to visit, actually. I don't know whether you've heard of it. It's called Metaculous. If I'm pronouncing that correctly, Metaculus. It's a website that's all about predictions. Yeah, so there's a massive community on there that try and predict events.
Oh, the future.
Yeah, so that's where Copilot cited some of Musk's predictions. But of course, the most obvious one is, when will the first weekly general AI system be devised? General intelligence. So they're saying generally 2026 for that is when the consensus tends to be.
Oh, wow.
There's stuff on there about biosecurity, nuclear security, climate change. I mean, it's a bit doom and gloom, to be fair, but it's interesting.
Looking at my Copilot history, how to make air fryer pork meatballs, Easter eggs in the Power Platform. I didn't realise that actually Easter eggs were stopped officially in 2002, I think it was. You know, the concept of embedding like hidden bugs in apps. Have you heard of that concept?
No.
Oh, well, maybe I am showing my age to you, is. So back in the day, you would have something called an Easter egg, and obviously it was Easter. And that Easter egg is a hidden bug in an application. And so Microsoft used to embed Easter eggs in things like Excel. You could type in, I don't know, some sort of special characters in a cell. I can't think of an exact example now, but all of a sudden it would play a tune or something like that. So these things were deliberately hidden into products. I wish I could think of a classic one. And they were officially discontinued, I think, in order to something to do with reputation and the support of products. So they were rid of completely, so that these hidden bugs weren't a feature. So there you go, Easter egg, something for you to co-pilot. What else? Anything else exciting?
So this is my ChatGPT history. I'm not going to give. People don't need to see all of this. I've got restore electrolytes naturally. I went through a phase of being like super thirsty. So they recommended that I add like salt and lemon into my water. So there we go.
Did it work?
Yes and no. I haven't been feeling as thirsty later on in the day. I think fundamentally I just don't drink enough. So I was trying to cheat and shortcut. Block nose essential oils. For the one, we ran out of Orbis oil. So I've got some essential oils in my drawer and it told me which ones I could use, which ones were safe for children. Incidentally, we're going down a rabbit hole, aren't we now? I didn't realize some essential oils cannot be used for kids. Like rosemary, for example, can't be used with kids. Like peppermint oil can't be used with kids. I don't know why. Maybe they're too abrasive. I've then got chicken burrito recipe.
There we go. See?
There we go. Iron deficiency symptoms. God, people think I'm crazy looking at this. Fridge insurance claim. My fridge broke. I was asking whether I had whether I could claim on home insurance or whether that had upped my premium.
I used it for a complaint letter as well recently. I used to be a complainer and I would spend hours putting together letters, and I spent about 5 minutes because I knew exactly what I wanted it to cover. I knew what had happened, and boy, did it put together a cracking letter and just solved it straight away. The company just came back and went, whoa, you know what you're talking about. I do not. Copilot knows what it's talking about. And so there's a good use case for you.
No, very good. And I mean, there's, yeah, again, we could talk for hours, but there were some stats recently on ChatGPT's or whatever the latest model ability to negotiate.
Mm.
So like supply negotiations and that sort of stuff apparently perform better than a human. But there we go. Anyway, that's enough of the rabbit hole. I want to have you on again at some point because I feel like we've only really scratched the surface of some of the cool stuff you can do with automations, but we've been going for an hour and 20. So to finish up, where can people find out more about you, Damien? How can they connect, reach out?
Yeah, well, the easiest way is to go straight onto their favorite search engine and stick in DemoBird365. But everywhere I am on LinkedIn and YouTube and Twitter, if you still use Twitter, my name is DemoBird365. So you won't miss me. And it'll be cracking, to hear from folk. Absolutely.
Yeah, very good. Excellent. All right, Damien. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. Sorry for keeping you longer than expected. But as I say, when you get me going, sometimes I don't stop talking.
It's been a pleasure.
But no, all the best. And I'm sure we'll catch up soon. All right, mate. But thanks again. It's been excellent. All right.
See you in a bit. Cheers, Adam. Thanks.
Hey again, and thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard today, don't forget to like, review, and subscribe. And for more goodies, head over to techforfinance.com. See you soon.